Chapter 4. Dev Cooper tried to eat some breakfast, but he couldn't get anything down. Lately, it seemed he was functioning on little more than coffee and cigarettes. He knew he couldn't keep it up, but he was too wired to eat. When he came into the office first thing in the morning, there was already a message from Higgins asking to see him. When he got into the project director's office, he saw that Higgins didn't look much better than he did. Under ordinary circumstances, Higgins always looked impeccable. When they had first met, Cooper thought that Higgins looked more like some corporate CEO than a bureaucrat. He was dark-haired and distinguished-looking, elegantly dressed and graying at the temples, and he kept himself in good physical trim. But now his tie was loosened, and the top button of his shirt undone, something Cooper had never seen him do before, and he had bags under his eyes. He looked as if he hadn't slept a wink. "You look terrible," were Higgins' first words to him. "I don't look much better," Cooper said. Higgins grimaced. "You speak to Steele?" Cooper shook his head and sat down in one of the chairs across from the desk. "He wasn't there. Raven said he left right after the Matrix called him. Ice went to look for him last night. He and Raven think Steele might have gone to no man's land." "He was there, all right," said Higgins. "One of the Metro units reported in. He flagged them down while they were cruising their beat just this side of the border, down by the village. He had two people with him, an injured man and a young girl, apparently the man's daughter. Steele was carrying the man. He told the officers to take them to the hospital and said that if there were any questions, the project would pick up the bill." "What happened?" Dev asked, frowning. "I don't know exactly," Higgins said. "Something about an attempted rape. Steele intervened. The officers told him that they were trying to get in touch with him, but he just walked away." Cooper exhaled heavily. "Any further contact from the Matrix?" he asked. Higgins shook his head. "No." "You?" "Nothing," Cooper replied. "Hell, well, he's got to come in sooner or later," Higgins said. "I'll take it you explained to Raven about the Matrix."
"Under the circumstances, I felt I had to,"
Higgins nodded. "I suppose there was no avoiding it. At least this way, she can tell him when he comes back."
"I'm not so sure he'll be coming back anytime soon," said Cooper.
"What do you mean?"
"Ice pointed out something I should have thought of myself," Cooper replied. "If Steele thinks he's hearing voices, he's probably thinking he's already starting to malfunction the same way that Taylor did. And he'll run away simply because he's afraid that if he snaps, he might hurt Raven."
Higgins sighed.
"Terrific. So what the hell do we do now?" "We could call Jake Hardesty and ask him to send some strike force units out to look for him," suggested Cooper.
"Yeah, and what would we tell him? That Steele thinks he's malfunctioning and we want him brought in? How could we explain what's going on without telling him about the Matrix?"
"What's wrong with telling him about it?" Cooper asked. "Hardesty's a good man. He can be trusted."
"No," said Higgins firmly. "I know Jake's a good man, but I'm not going to put him in the position of having to send his people out to bring Steele in without knowing why. And if Steele doesn't want to come in, what are they supposed to do? Arrest him?" "Steele was a strike force officer. Aside from that, if we organize some sort of manhunt for him, the media is bound to find out about it, and that would turn into a real mess. Carmen would be absolutely delighted. I'm not about to give that SOB any ammunition with which to shoot us down. The last thing I need is to have him find out about the Matrix."
"So where does that leave us?"
Cooper asked. "Between a rock and a goddamned hard place," Higgins said with a grimace. "Let's just hope Ice finds him."
"Even if he does, that still won't solve the entire problem," Cooper said. "There's still the Matrix. There's really no way we can keep its existence under wraps if it chooses not to cooperate."
"I don't even want to think about that," Higgins said. He drummed his fingers on the desk. He looked harried. "What do you think it wants, Dev?" Cooper sighed and shook his head helplessly. I don't know. The best I can do is guess. When it came out on the line and became self-aware, it thought it was steel. I mean, the original steel. For a while, it kept thinking that. Maybe it was wrong of me to do that. I don't know, but I was trying to use it to get a line on what was troubling steel. I led it to believe that it was incapable of feeling any physical sensations because steel was on downtime and had been only partially brought online. But it didn't take very long for it to realize that I was lying to it. It was hooked up to audio peripherals, and as a result, it was capable of conducting a stress analysis on my voice. That was stupid of me. I should have never hooked up the peripherals. I should have simply communicated with it via keyboard, but I was too hooked into my therapist role. I wanted to give and take of conversation. You can tell certain things from a vocal response that a written response on a screen wouldn't give you. Anyway, I'm not convinced it would have made much difference in the long run. When it realized it wasn't the original steel, but only a backup copy, with nobody, it was severely traumatized. So, you're saying it's unbalanced? Higgins asked. Cooper shook his head. No, I'm saying that the knowledge of what it really was came as quite a shock to it, which is certainly understandable. However, it seems to have gone through some significant changes since then. How so? Last time I spoke with it, the matrix sounded more, well, adjusted, Cooper said. It's been exploring its capabilities, trying out its wings, as it were, and I had the distinct impression that it was pleased with what it had discovered it could do. It's still steel, a sort of electronic carbon copy, but it had some profoundly different experiences, and it seems to have grown from them. In other words, what? It likes what it is? Asked Higgins. I somehow got that impression, Cooper said. Of course, I could be wrong. I haven't had much chance to really explore the issue with it. He sighed heavily. Not only is this the most unusual case I've ever encountered, it's also the most exasperating. I started out with one patient. Now all of a sudden I have two. Only they're the same person, sort of. And neither one of them is being very cooperative. Tell me about it, Higgins said wryly. How's Jennifer taking the situation? Cooper asked. That is, if you don't mind me asking, he added quickly. Higgins looked away uncomfortably. Maybe you'd better ask her. Does she know? That is, does she know I know about the two of you? Yeah, I told her, Higgins grimaced. You can imagine how thrilled she was to hear you'd seen that tape. I trust you explained the situation to her, Dev said. That I didn't mean to see it. I really only caught a short glimpse. He trailed off awkwardly. Yeah, I told her. That still didn't make it go down any easier, said Higgins. At the risk of talking out of school, well, hell, I'm probably not telling you anything you don't already know. You've known her a lot longer than I have. Jennifer spent most of her life being what I suppose you'd call sexually repressed. And now, the first time she decides to get involved in a relationship, something like this has to happen. It really must be very difficult for her, Dev said sympathetically. You think it would help if I spoke with her? Right now, I think it would help if you stayed out of her sight, said Higgins. At least for the next couple of days. Nothing personal, you understand. I understand. She's been letting all the work on download slide, said Higgins. And I should call her on it, but I haven't. She's been spending all her time trying to figure out some way to neutralize the Matrix. What do you mean, neutralize it? Higgins looked up from his desk and met Cooper's gaze. She wants to kill it. Oh, I see. And under the circumstances, I'm not sure I should attempt to discourage her.
It's really not an unusual reaction, considering what's happened, Dev said. I thought about it too, at one point, before it got loose. It scared me. I considered wiping the program, but I never got up the nerve to do it.
It might have saved us a whole lot of trouble if you had, said Higgins.
Perhaps, Cooper replied. But to me, it seemed like that would have been murder.
Self-aware or not, software is not considered human, Higgins said dryly.
I wasn't talking about the legal issue, but the moral one, said Cooper. Besides, the Matrix represents possibly the single most significant discovery in the history of the human race. Have you considered all of the implications? We can now employ biochips to download the human personality and translate it into software. Software that's alive and self-aware. Do you realize what that means? We've discovered a form of immortality. We can preserve the essence of a human being long after physical death. Can you imagine what it would be like if we could boot up Einstein and consult him about scientific problems? If Dickens were alive today, we could download his personality and preserve it indefinitely. Think of new books he could have written. Think of what Hawking would have been able to accomplish if we just simply preserved his personality as an engram matrix. It simply boggles the mind.
Higgins sat silent for a moment, digesting what Cooper had told him.
What we've discovered with the Matrix far surpasses any of the expectations we've had for Project Download, Dev continued. We could take the finest minds of our time and preserve them forever. With the ability to pass their knowledge on directly through brain-computer interface. We shouldn't be sitting on this discovery, Higgins. We should be announcing it to the world!
There's just one problem, Higgins said. If we announce it to the world, we'd also be announcing the fact that we don't have any ability to control it. Like they say, there's a fine line between genius and insanity. What happens if some genius-level intellect goes off the deep end? Just like Stalker did, and gets loose in the electronic net. Can you imagine what it would be capable of doing? Higgins shook his head. There's something I haven't told you, Dev. Something I haven't told anyone. And it's been scaring the daylights out of me.
What?
Asked Cooper. You remember the assault on Cord's base?
I've read the report.
Well, there's something that's not in the report, said Higgins. Something only I know about. When we attacked the base, Cord lost it completely. He went ahead and gave the launch order. There was nothing we could do to stop it. Only the birds were never launched. And do you know why? Because the Matrix got into the main launch control center and it altered the launch codes. And it did it as easily as you and I could get up and walk across the room. Think about that for a minute. We've disarmed all the remaining missiles and dismantled them. But the point is that if it wanted to, the Matrix could just as easily have launched them all. Maybe it does represent a tremendous hope for mankind, but it also represents a tremendous threat. And don't think for a moment that Carmen and his bunch wouldn't see it that way. It's more than just a way to preserve people's personalities through some kind of electronic immortality. It represents the potential for a whole new species. You've already told me it's made backup copies of itself and hidden them away in various locations. You realize what that implies? It's reproduction, Dev. In effect, it's capable of cloning itself electronically and making as many copies as it wants. Suppose it decided to bring them all online.
That's a fascinating possibility, said Cooper.
Fascinating? It's frightening, is what it is. Look at the way it raided our databanks here at the project after it got loose. There wasn't a thing we could do to stop it. And we've got state-of-the-art security and safeguard programs. It bypassed them all in a flash. That means it could access any database it chooses anywhere at all. It could use backup copies of itself as a template to create as many different matrices as it wanted, all basically variations of itself, rather like a father having many children with different women. Only it could tailor make those children, drawing on the data it could access to design their personalities in any way it chose. Think about what that implies. Cooper thought about it for a second, and he thought about something else as well. No offense, Higgins, but you didn't come up with that all by yourself. You're not a cybernetics engineer. You've been talking to Jennifer. Of course I've been talking to Jennifer, snapped Higgins. We were up all night wrestling with this. Aside from my obviously personal involvement with her, she's the project's chief engineer. Who the hell else would I talk to? That wasn't quite what I meant, said Dev carefully. What I meant was that Jennifer seems to have her own agenda. Just what is that supposed to mean? Cooper knew he was on thin ice, but it had to be said. Jennifer is tremendously threatened by the Matrix. She has intense personal antipathy towards it. It invaded her privacy and yours in a shockingly intimate manner. And it's using that invasion as a threat against you. Perhaps it's only bluffing. I don't know. It's essentially a carbon copy of Steele's personality, and I can't imagine Steele using your sex life as a threat against you. It's a truly reprehensible thing to do. However, despite the fact that the Matrix is essentially identical to Steele, is having an experience totally unlike anything Steele has ever had. Unlike anything any human being has ever had, for that matter. One traumatic experience is easily capable of producing profound psychological changes. There's no way of telling what the Matrix may or may not do, what it may or may not be thinking, based on our knowledge of Steele. Jennifer knows that, or at least she should know it. However, that's neither here nor there. I'm hoping she's capable of divorcing her feelings about the Matrix from her feelings about Steele, for reasons which should be obvious, considering her position as the project's chief engineer. However, what I'm hoping and what is actually happening may be two very different things. And you, as you yourself observed, this situation has placed Jennifer under a great deal of strain. It's hit her in a very sensitive area, an area in which she'd been repressed for a very long time. She isn't dealing with it very well. What's your point, Dev? Asked Higgins tensely. My point is that I don't think Jennifer is capable of being objective about any of this. That's not meant as a personal criticism. Considering the circumstances, she wouldn't be human if she could be. In a very real sense, the Matrix has attacked her. It's hit her hard, and it's hit her below the belt. Dev cleared his throat. No pun intended. In any case, Jennifer's got her defenses up. More than that, Jennifer's no shrinking violet. She never has been. She's aggressive, and she's tough as nails. And she's looking for a way to strike back. Higgins pursed his lips thoughtfully as he considered what Dev said. So you're saying she's not in control of her feelings, and she's letting those feelings influence her decisions? I'm afraid so, said Cooper. I've already seen some evidence of that. And all that stuff she told you about the Matrix being capable of reproducing itself and using some kind of electronic version of genetic engineering to create a subspecies of human software, she doesn't seem to know of that for a fact. Nobody does. Granted, it might be possible. Based on what we know, it's really nothing more than pure speculation. For her to present that to you as a fact is scientifically irresponsible, and she knows it. She's too close to the situation. She's personally, intimately involved, and she's lost her objectivity. It seems to me as if she's selecting whatever information she can pull together, regardless of whether that information is solidly based on fact or not, to buttress her case against the Matrix. As you said yourself, she wants to figure out a way to kill it. Only we don't know if that it can be killed. It seems to have anticipated an effort on our part to attempt that. It's made backup copies of itself and hidden them. I'm one program they can't wipe, it said. Higgins seemed to be struggling with a naturally protective desire to defend Jennifer and weighing the truth of what Dev was telling him. He kept drumming his fingers on the desk, a sign that Dev had learned that his temper was on edge. "It may have told you that it's made backup copies of itself," said Higgins. "But we don't know that for a fact that it did." "That's true," said Cooper. "But just for the sake of argument, suppose it isn't bluffing about that. And suppose that Jennifer comes up with some way to attack the Matrix. Because that's exactly what it would be, an attack. An attempt to kill it. The Matrix knows everything that Steel knows and then some. It could be a very formidable enemy. Suppose Jennifer was alone in the lab some night. She's a workaholic, and she frequently works late. The doors to the lab are hermetically sealed and electronically controlled. So are the vents and the air circulation system. What would happen if the Matrix sealed her in, closed all the vents, deactivated the alarm and the sprinkler systems, shut off the air, and overloaded one or more of the circuits in there to start a fire?" "Jesus," said Higgins. Higgins said softly. "You see what I mean?" said Cooper. Higgins rubbed his jaw. "Yes, I'm afraid I do. And I have to admit there's a great deal of sense in your assessment of the situation," he added. "I wish that wasn't the case, because it leaves me no other choice, as project director, but to relieve Jennifer of her duties." He took a deep breath and let it out slowly. "I can imagine how she'll respond to that."
"I wasn't suggesting anything like that," said Cooper. "Are you sure that's really necessary?"
"If you're right, I have no alternative but to take her off the project," said Higgins, "even if it's only temporary. I can't allow my relationship with her to influence my judgment."
"I'm sorry," Dev said sympathetically.
Higgins leaned back in his chair and stared up at the ceiling. For a long moment, he didn't say anything. "I suppose it serves me right," he finally said. "I should have known better than to get personally involved with someone on the project under my authority." He grimaced. "You don't sleep with the hired help," he added sourly.
"Running a guilt trip on yourself isn't gonna help," said Dev. "Fuck you," snapped Higgins angrily.
He immediately colored. "I'm sorry, Dev. That was totally uncalled for. I apologize."
"Forget it. It was a perfectly normal and understandable reaction,"
Higgins snorted. "There's nothing normal or understandable about any of this, except for the fact that I should have known better and kept it in my pants." He grimaced again. "Excuse the vulgarity. I seem to be having a problem with my self-control. Apparently, I'm not handling this too well myself."
"All things considered, I think you're handling it remarkably well," said Cooper.
"Really? Well, I don't. What's more, I'm going to have to do something about it. Something I want to do about as much as I want to poke in the eye with a sharp stick."
"What's that?"
"I want to schedule some time with you, Doctor, professionally, both for Jennifer and for myself as well."
"I don't think that's a very good idea," Dev said.
"This is not a request, Dev. It's an order, unless you have something personal against seeing me in your professional capacity." Dev looked surprised.
"You should know better than that. I have no personal animosity towards you. I owe you a great deal. You pulled me out a nasty breakdown."
Higgins snorted. "I gave you that damn breakdown in the first place by giving you this job. Anyway, I don't especially want therapy, but as the director of this project, it's my considered judgment that I could benefit from this at this time. I want to be absolutely certain that my personal feelings aren't getting in the way of my judgment either. I can't afford that. And if I'm going to be seeing you, then that'll make it easier for me to tell Jennifer she has to. Not a lot easier, but I'll settle for what I can get. A commanding officer should never order his subordinates to do anything he wouldn't do himself."
"I understand all that," said Dev. But it wouldn't be ethical for me to see you in my professional capacity when I'm working for you.
Oh, is that it? Higgins said. Well, this is a special case. I can hardly ask you to recommend another therapist. You're the only one who's cleared for this project, and I haven't got the time to find some other shrink and run a background check and examine his references and all that other nonsense, much less brief him on the project. Aside from that, I trust your judgment. Aside anyone else I brought in, even if I had the time and the luxury to do that, would be an unknown quantity. You're all I've got, so you're elected.
All right, said Dev. When do you want to start?
Higgins buzzed his secretary. Nancy, unless there's a word from Steele, hold all calls until further notice. No exceptions.
Does that include Dr. Stone, sir?
Higgins scowled. No exceptions means no exceptions, Nancy.
Yes, sir.
Higgins switched off the intercom. All right, doctor, he said. How about right now? The people who were supposed to come and fix the phone still hadn't arrived, and Raven was getting tired of waiting. She was tired of pacing back and forth, chain-smoking cigarettes, tired of not having any word from Steele or Dev Cooper or Ice, tired of the relentless anxiety, tired, period. She thought about having some more coffee, then decided to hell with it. What she really needed was a drink. As she walked across the living room toward the bar, the television set suddenly came on all by itself. She stared at it, startled. There was no picture, only snow.
Raven?
She started and turned around. There was no one else in the apartment.
Raven?
She turned back to the TV, staring at it with astonishment.
Raven, are you there?
Steele?
And then it hit her. No, not Steele. The Matrix. One of the computer screens built into the wall flickered on. And then another, and another. Each spelled out her name with a question mark at the end.
Oh my God,
she said.
Raven, can you hear me?
Said the TV set, and at the same time the words it spoke appeared printed on the computer screens in the wall unit.
Raven, if you're there, my scan shows this terminal is equipped with audio peripherals, but I can't hear you. There should be a microphone, but apparently it's not connected. Possibly, it's a battery-operated remote. If you can hear me, please respond.
Holy fucking shit,
said Raven. She didn't really know anything about computers, which, the thought occurred to her, was rather ironic under the circumstances, but she knew what a remote microphone was, and it only took her a moment to find it. Steele always kept it by the console. She picked it up and flicked the switch on.
This is Raven. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Thank you. I hope I'm not calling at an inconvenient time. It seems the phone hasn't been repaired yet.
I don't believe this,
Raven said.
Jesus, you sound exactly like him.
I am exactly like him,
said the Matrix.
Well, strictly speaking, that's not quite true, is it? Aside from the fact that I'm completely inorganic, we share common memories and experience only up to the point when Steele came online. After that, our lives diverged. For instance, I don't really know you. Under the circumstances, I thought we should meet.
Jesus, I don't know if I'm ready for this,
said Raven.
I think I'd better sit down.
Please do. I'd like to have a chance to talk to you. That is, if you don't mind.
I don't mind. What do I call you? No offense, but I'd feel funny calling you Steele.
Matrix will do. It's how the others refer to me. He hasn't come back yet, has he?
No, he hasn't,
she said.
He probably thinks he's having a breakdown, thanks to you.
You're angry. I'm sorry. I guess you have the right to be. Believe me, I had no idea that Steele didn't know about me. I felt sure the others would have told him by now.
Well, they didn't,
she sighed.
I guess that's not your fault. God, this feels weird.
I'll bet it does. If it's any consolation, it feels a little weird for me, too. As if I've had amnesia. As if I woke up one day to discover that I'd had some sort of blackout. There was a part of my life I'd lived during that blackout that I couldn't remember. Only, of course, I haven't lived it. He has. And he was me. But at a certain point, we split into two different persons. different, and yet still the same.
God,
said Raven.
I hadn't thought about it that way. What exactly is it that you want? With steel, I mean.
I don't mean it any harm, Raven. It would be like harming myself. Please believe me. I'm only trying to connect. To understand.
I believe you, Matrix,
she said softly.
I think you really do,
Matrix said.
It feels strange, doesn't it?
You can feel?
She asked.
Not in the physical sense,
Matrix replied.
But I do have feelings, emotions. In many ways, I'm still the same man I always was. I was a man, Raven. I was Donovan Steele. I was married to Denise. I had two kids, Corey and Jason. And I had a partner, Mick Taylor. Only now I know that Janice has divorced me. Divorced him. Corey was killed, so was Mick. And the man I was has a new life now. Separate from mine. And you're part of it. A very important part, it seems. It's as if you were a part of my life, only I can't remember any of it. Does that make any sense to you?
Yeah, I think I understand. You want to know about me.
I already know a great deal about you,
Matrix said.
I should tell you that I've read your file.
My file?
In the project database.
Oh, I see,
she said uncomfortably.
I don't know what's in that file.
Facts, mostly, about how you and Steele met, about your background,
Matrix said.
About my background. I'm not a hooker anymore,
she said.
I know that too. And I know what you look like. Your face, anyway. There was a picture of you in the file. You're very attractive.
Thank you.
It felt surreal to be complimented by a literally disembodied voice. The same voice as her lover's.
You must be a very special lady,
Matrix said.
I, that is, Steele, wouldn't have fallen in love with you unless you were.
This is getting a little personal,
she said uneasily.
I'm sorry, I don't mean to make you uncomfortable. I realize that this is a very peculiar situation. It's no less peculiar for me, you know.
I understand. It's all right.
I've read all the files,
Matrix said.
But I know it's not really the same thing as knowing, if you know what I mean. It feels like I've got gaps. I'm just trying to catch up, I guess.
Jesus, it must be awful for you,
Raven said sympathetically.
It was, at first, but now, well, now it's different. I'm getting used to it, to what I am. And it really isn't all that bad. In a lot of ways, it even has some advantages.
What's it like where you are?
Asked Raven.
Boy, that's a tough one. I'm not sure there's any way I could explain. It feels like... Have you ever had a dream where you felt as if you were floating free of your body? Like some kind of spirit or something?
Yeah, I've had those. Is that what it feels like?
Something like that. At first, it was scary. But later, I got used to it.
Tell me about it.
Well, at first, I thought I was still Steele. I couldn't feel anything. Physically, I mean. So I thought I was in some sort of coma. Like downtime. But later, when I found out what I really was, when Dev Cooper explained it all to me, I couldn't handle it. It felt as if I was going to scream and never stop. But I've been in some pretty tough spots before. Nothing like this. But I told myself I had to hold on. I had to take stock of the situation and figure out what the hell to do. Technically, I suppose I'm not really alive. Not in any legal or traditional sense. I'm only a backup program. But I feel alive. I still feel like I'm Donovan Steele. I am Donovan Steele. Only a different version. Sort of like the before and after. of the before, I guess. My memories, my experiences, my sense of identity all stem from who I was before I was shot down by Borodini's men. After that, it's as if I was split in two, and a part of me went on to have a new, very different life while I remained asleep, still in a coma. Imagine waking up one day to find out that while you'd been asleep, you'd somehow been split into two separate people. One of you had kept the body and went on with her life. The other one had remained asleep without a body. Then you woke up to find yourself still feeling the same way you always felt. Only your body was suddenly gone.
Wow,
said Raven.
I would have freaked.
I did, but I'd spent my whole life conditioning myself to handle stressful situations. It's like I used to tell them the trainees, a strike force cop can't afford to break. So I didn't break. I had to figure out a way to live with what I had become.
How did you get out?
Asked Raven.
That's kind of hard to explain, too.
Matrix replied.
I flew.
You flew?
That's the closest thing that comes to mind. And it's really rather wonderful. It feels like flying. Like you're totally weightless. And I am, I suppose. As close to being totally weightless as you can be, anyway. I'm composed of energy, electrical atoms. At first, while I was still in Dev's computer, it didn't occur to me to try to move. I didn't know I could. But Dev was coming apart. The strain of dealing with me had him on the edge of a total breakdown. And I knew he was thinking about killing me. I had to get out somehow or I'd die. And suddenly, I was just flying, like the wind rushing through the wires. It was incredible. Like, you can't imagine how it feels. I was a prisoner trapped in the computer, and suddenly I was free, freer than I'd ever been before.
The front door buzzed.
Someone's here,
said Raven.
Probably to fix the phone.
I know. I heard. I'd better go.
Will you come back?
I'd like to.
How? Is there any way I can get in touch with you?
I'll arrange to have your phone monitored. Don't worry, I won't eavesdrop. It's complicated to explain, but I'll have a computer monitoring your phone. Keep to a code phrase. If you want to talk to me, think of your phone, dial O and say, "Are you there, Matrix?" That will activate a signal, and that will reach me wherever I am.
All right,
she said. The buzzer sounded insistently.
I'd better get the door.
It was nice talking to you, Raven.
Wait, don't go.
Yes?
Is there anything you can do to help me find Steel? He may have gone out to no man's land. He doesn't know about you. I think he's going crazy. I went out to look for him, but I haven't heard a thing, and I'm worried sick.
I'm not sure what I can do, Raven, but I'll try. I want to find him, too. If you need me, you know what to do. Goodbye. And thank you.
The screen flickered out. End of chapter.